Well, hello everyone. My name's Chris Lloyd and welcome to Glenbrook's latest podcast. And I'm pretty sure this is going to be the best podcast we've ever done because the guys I'm speaking to have been preparing this for 6 months or so. It's going to be exciting. We're going to learn a bit more about the Northwest industrial market and the Northwest investment market with guests from Gerald Eve in the name of Jason Prince and Callum Robertson. Good morning, lads.
Morning.
Morning, Chris.
When you say we've been preparing it for 6 months, Chris, you mean it's taken us that long to actually get a date in the diary?
Yes, quite. Yeah.
I'll pass my apologies.
Yeah. It's all your fault, Callum, isn't it? I don't know why that is.
I know. Yeah. Unbelievable.
This is a recording, but I'm talking to you both on Zoom, and I can see you both, and I am particularly entertained by your headpiece thing that you're wearing there, Callum. And I'm not talking about your hair; I'm talking about your recording Madonna thing.
Yeah, well, I quite like. I like to. I don't know quite how to come back on that one.
You can't. Anyway.
Right, that's a good start
to
the podcast.
where we like to start these things is a bit of a sort of getting to know you. So, Jason, do you want to give us a brief potted history on your career and how you've got to Gerald Eve?
It started off, came out of college a long time ago, and then came over to Manchester and actually started working for a firm called GF Singleton & Co, who did a lot of plant and machinery, which obviously is in factories, which is why, I suppose, from the word go, I was always walking around factories and warehouses, so sort of had more of a leaning towards industrial agency. After that, I went to DTZ, and then did a couple of years there with Brown Birdswistle. Then went to Chesterton, then Donaldson's, then Cushman and Wakefield, and now Gerald Eve. And I suppose what I should point out is that I have the unfortunate mantle, really, of having worked for lots of firms that no longer exist. So when I worked for DTZ, they don't exist anymore. And then I went to Chesterton, and they went pop. Then I went to Donaldson's. They got bought by DTZ. And I went to Cushman and Wakefield. And, well, Cushman and Wakefield got bought by DTZ but kept the name. Yeah. And now I'm at Gerald Eve.
And how about you, Callum? How on earth have you got to where you've got to?
I surprise myself sometimes. I graduated from the University of Aberdeen and came out pretty wet behind the ears, and then effectively came down to, I got offered a job with Drivers Jonas on the graduate scheme, so joined Drivers Jonas in 2005. So did my training there. I was recommended to join the National Capital Markets team in 2008. And then obviously in 2010, we had the Deloitte merger, which had a very kind of enjoyable, or 2009, that had a very enjoyable sort of 8 years at Deloitte. And then we as a business moved over to Gerald Eve. And I genuinely can't believe it is 4 years since we've been at Gerald Eve as a business.
How long is that?
Yeah. Four years in, it was 4 years in June. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that, lads. So we're here to talk about the shed market, the investment market, mainly in the shed arena. So sheds, if you read all the press, all the property press, it's the sort of the last sector standing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I almost feel a bit guilty in these, you know, dreadful times, uncertain times, changing times. And people say, how's it going? And you say, oh, great. It's really good. You almost feel guilty saying because of what's going on. But yeah, I mean, the shed market is performing very, very well. at the moment, you know, all the stats are that I think in Q2 nationally, take up was up 17% on the 5-year quarterly average. Total take up of like 14 million square feet in Q2 alone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's all, everyone's been well documented that online is a massive, massive factor behind that. Callum will start laughing now. So he knows that I love a bit of a few stats. And just to put it into context as what's happened in the last sort of 4 months, in 2010, online sales as a percentage of total retail was 7%. And then 5 years later, 2015, it was 13, 14%. Another 5 years later, at the start of this year, it was 20, 21%. And then as of last month, it was 30%. So it's jumped 10% in like 3 months. And there's, you know, anecdotally, online retailers are saying that they've had the equivalent of 5 years growth in 3 months.
Wow.
So they're having to react massively, you know, to that. And, you know, there'll be people out there, and quite rightly, they'll say, well, that jump in demand is purely because of lockdown. And, you know, it won't stay at that figure. It probably won't initially, but will it drop back down to 20%? No, I'm sure that a lot of those online sales will stick, the majority. So it might throttle back a couple of percent, is my personal take on it. But it's only going to go one way. And I think plus as well, because of what's happened with more people working from home, you know, people finding it easier to accept deliveries when they order online, I think it's only going to go one way. It's going to keep growing massively.
So we love a prediction on this podcast. Where do you think it will be in 2025 then as a percentage?
I have cheated a bit here because I do know there's a stat saying that by 2028 it was going to be at 50%. That was the stat pre-COVID. That it was going to be at 50% by 28. I think by 25, yeah, it's probably going to be 50%, maybe a bit more. So I'll come forward.
We'll come back to this, obviously. So, Callum, is the uptick in the occupational market, is that being recognised in your world by investors?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it's kind of this flight to long and strong or very well secured multi-let industrials. I think we are definitely seeing a shift towards the single let sheds, very much reflective of, you know, what Jason's just said about the occupier market. I mean, in context on a national level, in 2019, logistics property equated for 53% of the capital market transactions nationally. In Q2, it's now at 83%, so it's kind of a seismic change. And, you know, the facilities, you know, the occupiers are needing facilities that are build to suit is a massively important for them, business efficiencies. And, you know, for that, they will commit to long leases. And they want to defend their trading position. So I think from an investment cap market point of view, the land supply is not huge at the moment of oven ready sites, and you know it can be seen as a very defensive investment.
Yeah, I understand that. Jason, just on when Callum says build to suit, what's that mean? What are the occupiers looking for in their sheds?
Well, in terms of like size or kit or spec or anything like that, in terms of, well, I suppose I could answer myself, really, that's an idea. In terms of size, it's across, I mean, it sounds flippant to say, it's across all sizes, really. I mean, we're noticing an increase in demand for, you know, it's like 10,000 square feet upwards. That does, in terms of build to suit, which Cam's talking about, design and build, that is very much at the larger end. But even those occupiers now, because of what's happened, they'll be more inclined to go for a spec build, which is either under construction or finished, and adapt it rather than start a design and build process, which can be very, very lengthy, and they need to react very quickly. So, you know, the spec build is very much flavour of the month and something which in the Northwest we've got a bit short on in terms of supply. And that dates back to 2019 with Brexit nervousness, really, because occupiers were, they were conscious of Brexit in 2019. So, of course, that sort of kicks on down through the market, and developers are going to sit there quite rightly and understandably and say, well, I'll just hold on for a few months and see what happens with Brexit. And then they got a bit more confident, and then bang, COVID.
So you put the supply issue down to developers not putting their shoulder to the wheel and speccing stuff rather than a lack of suitable sites, or is it a bit of both?
It's both. I wouldn't say it's hard to blame developers because, you know, obviously they take their soundings from the market, from people like me at marketing meetings. But yes, there was a lack of demand or a lesser demand in 2019, which obviously translated into less appetite to do spec from developers, which is completely understandable. But in terms of available sites, oven ready sites, yeah, there is an issue with supply in the Northwest, especially for bigger units. You know, 200,000, 250,000 square feet plus. There's not that many sites in the Northwest where you could say, right, I'll agree a deal and let's start building now. And it doesn't help with, you know, various sites which are Greenbelt releases being called in recently.
Yeah. So there's a lot of chatter in the news at the moment about how the planning system is being reformed, but the focus in my eyes seems to be on the residential market rather than industrial market. Is that right? Is that your take read on it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think industrial is still seen as almost a dirty occupier. You know, residential is very much top priority in terms of planning authorities, is my understanding and my take on it. But I think, you know, something needs to be done for the industrial sector because we are struggling with supply. That's only going to get worse. And ironically, you know, there's this stat knocking around that every new house needs 69 square feet of warehousing space, again, because of online. Well, ironically, if you give more residential planning permissions, you need more warehousing. And I wouldn't be surprised if that figure of 69 square feet warehousing per residential has gone up since COVID because each household is ordering more online.
Yeah. So it's just snowballing then.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
And in terms of the occupiers then, who's leading the charge? Are Amazon, for example, as acquisitive as they were, are they getting shorter space because they seem to be signing leases in the last couple of years, left, right, and centre.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, they're the sort of the obvious one.
Yeah, I mean, they are the obvious one. I mean, I know we have the prime logistics research, and in the latest update, it's reported in there that Amazon in Q2 this year alone committed to or secured planning permission for 6 million square feet.
Wow.
And they're keeping going, you know, is my understanding, that is that they're just keeping going. They've got a program, they want more. And it's the same story for other online retailers. You know, the Hut Group, they're expanding. People like Boohoo have got requirements out there, AO.com, you know, they're just Northwest ones who are all looking to expand. But there is also quite a bit of onshoring coming forward now, which... Right. It was rumoured again last year because of Brexit nervousness. People were saying, well, maybe there'll be an increase in onshoring, particularly for manufacturing, where people will want to make goods in the UK rather than in Europe with Brexit. But now, because of COVID, we're seeing it now that there are more people onshoring because of Brexit and because of COVID. Because they're worried that if, you know, if the borders get closed, how do they get their goods in? You know, Jaguar Land Rover were a famous one, weren't they, at the time, where they were apparently flying parts out of China in suitcases just to get them out.
Wow.
At one point. So, you know, some companies like that, that they're going to sit there and say, "We can't, this cannot happen to us again. We've got to make the stuff in the UK." And that, well, we're certainly seeing that there's hard evidence of that, particularly on the PPE side of things at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And a question for you both, really. What's, I presume this is all having a very positive effect on rents and rental growth.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I think rents are improving slightly. I think the incentive side of things is coming down as well. So it's a bit of a blend, really, of reduced incentives and slight improvement in rental growth. But I think that's probably yet to come, to be honest, Chris, because I think, you know, the supply side issues are kicking in now. And then in, you know, you can see in 6 months' time, they're really going to be really, really in play. So people will be able to start to push the rents on.
From, and where do you, again, I'm asking you to predict, where do you think, as an occupational man, you know, where do you think rents will get to in the next 12 months? And then Callum, the institutions that are buying these investments, what are they sort of forecasting for the 5-10 years time for the rental growth? So Jason first, where do you think rents will get to over the course of the next 12-18 months?
It's a podcast, I can't just smile, can I? where do I think they'll get to? I mean, it's difficult for the size, for a start. So if we say, I don't know, 100 to 200,000 square footers, those rents at the moment, absolutely prime rents, are probably 675, 7 quid probably now.
Yeah.
7 quid a square foot, for you, absolute prime areas, Warrington, Trafford Park. Where will they get to in the next, you say 12 months, Chris? Yeah.
Yeah, 12 to 18 months.
12 to 18 months. I mean, again, because of supply shortages, you know, if someone was to build something brand new, they're going to go another 50p, I would have thought.
Right.
50p a square foot.
And Callum, what's the you know, all your institutional clients? I'm sure they all have their big research teams, and Geraldine probably has research teams as well. What's their sort of long term prediction for rents?
Right, our kind of, I think I'll probably start off with our house kind of view initially in terms of what we think rents are going to do. And then move kind of onto my own gut view. I think the rental, our rents, we are forecasting no rental growth as a house. We only forecast out in a 5-year period. If you look at, we are forecasting in prime rents quite a big bounce back in 2021, purely as a method of catching up with a year of no growth. We're looking at kind of, well, our average over the kind of four years out to 2024 is about 3.5% per annum. And, you know, I can see that as being quite credible over the period. And it comes back to the supply, in the tighter land supply, I think. And I think that, you know, ultimately, the UK economy, I know we're in a bit of a weird period at the moment, but the long-term prospects of the economy are very strong. And I think, as Jason touched on earlier, you know, this continual pressure about businesses moving to online fulfillment, warehousing, all of this stuff, I think is just going to put in a continued pressure on rents going forward over the next five years. And then I think, if you then separately look at, you know, the second tier market, I think all these secondary industrial estates will start to benefit and rents will start to move in because the discount to prime is too much. And I think that the other thing I would say about rents is actually people want to locate their businesses where A, their customers are, and B, its access is unrivaled. And I think that will be the bigger driver on rental tone. And I think you could see stronger, better access locations performing, outperforming that, if I'm being honest, over the next 5 years.
So you're painting a quite a rosy picture there. What's the effect on yields going to be then?
I think when you're looking at the logistics sector, you know, you've got to look at what H1 gilt rate is, what below half a percent. If you're buying a 20-year income strip, is for a 20-year income lease with kickers in it. I mean, I think for longer term income, you've got to see that hardening over the next 2 to 3 years. You know, I certainly can't see that market softening.
So where's that market at the moment?
I think for prime Northwest shares, you certainly for a 20-year lease, you'd be 4.25%.
Right.
You know, sort of 10-year income. I think you, people will pay down to 4.5% for it, for the right type of building location, you know. And I think the driver to that, and I'm speaking about a very, very, very small fragment of the market of best, and I think that will continue.
And then, okay, and then if you widen your radius a little bit, where perhaps the location isn't, the tenant's great, but the location isn't seen as, you know, the, as you say, the best of best. Where would you see yields on that?
God, it's quite a big spread. I think for second tier, I think that there are a lot of sector specialists entering the market or have been entering the market in the last sort of 3 years. And we'll come down to their dividend yield. But you know, I still can see pricing of good multi-lets between what, 5.5% and 6.5%.
Right. Okay.
You
and
know,
then just to put some context around it, how would that compare with? And I appreciate it's very difficult at the moment to assess, but how would you compare that with like a prime office building in Spinningfields? So now,
I think for prime office buildings, I would say, I mean, it's really difficult because nothing's traded. You can't hang your coat on anything. I would think.
Well, that's the experts today for this podcast.
So yeah. Well, thanks, Lloyd. No, nothing like hang me out to dry. But I think that probably I would say that sheds might be trading marginally stronger than offices. But look, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the office market? Are these changes short period? Are they longer term period? You know, sort of running an office with 30 people in it, it's kind of, you know, it's a lot of changes until we kind of get some form of stabilization. I think it's very difficult. But I'm of the view that I think that, you know, I like the office. I don't think by any means this is the death of the office. It might be slightly reworked, you know, in terms of that. And actually, you know, I like seeing my colleagues as well. I'm bumping into people like you.
I completely agree. And the death of the office has been spectacularly exaggerated. And people do miss people. And, you know, there's no one more bored or frustrated than me having to sit at home for the last 3 months. It was and I think there'll be a growing realisation that teams don't work very well. I know we're on a Zoom call now, but it's just not quite the same, is it? It's not quite the same. It's not as efficient. And I think we will all slowly, when I say we, the sort of the professions and service industry will slowly go back to the office in the course of a year. That's my own view.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be 5 days a week so much in future. I think it'll be more people do, you know, 2 or 3 days in the office and then a day on the road or a day working from home. But yeah, I think the office is, it's never going to go away, is it?
No.
It's quite. I think it's quite telling when you look at. I'd be quite interested to see how that restaurant below your office is trading at the moment.
It always seems quite busy. Every time I walk past, they seem really busy.
I don't think we're allowed to promote restaurants on this.
It seems busy. A couple of coffee shops have sort of opened and closed. In the last, you know, prep's not open at the moment for some reason, which is a bit disappointing. We're going to get my lunch, but yeah, it all. I don't know whether I'm just one of life's optimists, but I just think that gradually we'll all come back to. I think when people get comfortable with getting on public transport, I think that's essential, and I think that'll be a game that'll change everything. And then dare I mention the retail market, Callum?
I would say, I mean, the retail market, I mean, it is real change across the board. I mean, look, I think there's still quite a lot of opportunities in retail.
To pull Jason in, I mean, a lot of these retail parks, they're kind of ready-made last mile delivery locations, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think on retail, I mean, the high street isn't going to die. I think it will change. It'll become more of a sort of a brand experience, really. And, you know, people will probably, I don't know, you've got Amazon doing all these cashless, well, not all, but doing cashless shops in America where you just walk in, pick up what you want, put it in your bag and walk out, and it knows you're an Amazon Prime customer and it sends you the bill. And you're done. So people will, it will become easier to shop on the high street. And I think people, you're always going to want to get out again, aren't you? Like coming into the office. You know, people want to go out, they want the experience, they want the interaction. And I think that, you know, it might change and other centres will improve. So some of the, you know, the towns, I don't know, just pick a town, Preston, somewhere like that, that high street might actually get better, because there will be more residential, more people sort of shopping, staying, living locally more. So they will go to places like that more often. So all these big, you know, retailers that shut down in places like that might actually end up opening up there again. So, yeah, I don't think retail's dead at all.
Yeah. Okay, we're getting to the end of our sort of allotted time on this. Just a sort of more lighter note, you know, any positives from the lockdown? You know, have you had any benefits from that? And Jason, we were talking about we're teachers now, aren't we?
Yeah, and I must admit, my times table skills have come on a treat in the last 3 months. Okay, well, don't ask me anything though.
Yeah. How about you, Callum?
Yeah, well, actually, to be fair, I've been a real, over my career of being in the office, and actually, to be fair, to be forced not to be in the office, I can be equally as productive at home, locked away. You know, I think that across the board, I think that 100% my productivity probably has increased more working at home, but actually I still miss going into the office and having the crack in the office, you know.
I tell you what probably has improved actually is my negotiation skills. Being at home with a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old is permanent negotiation training, I can tell you.
Yeah, I know what you mean there. Okay, great. Okay, well, I enjoyed that, lads. So thanks very much. We'll get this uploaded next week. And yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Pleasure.
No worries. Cheers, Lloydie.